Be extraordinary. Seventh Wave Network.
Hello, and welcome to Spirit of Film Conversations. I'm your host, Randall Libero. We broadcast each week on the premier channel for transformational talk radio on the internet, Seventh Wave Network, online at seventhwavenetwork.com. Movies are changing the way we think, live, and dream. So each week, we showcase today's top independent and visionary filmmakers whose movies evoke what I call the spirit of film, which is a metaphor for the movie's magical power to transform our lives. And this week, we are continuing our series of programs on documentary films that are breaking new ground with their search for values and meaning and a willingness to take risks on controversial subjects. And we have as our very special guest, Dr. Lynn Kitai, producer and director of The Phoenix Lights, a very compelling and thoroughly documented account of the most bizarre and widely observed UFO event in modern times. Lynn, Dr. Lynn, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. Enjoy.
Well, The Phoenix Lights, if you don't know about it, you can open another browser at thephoenixlights.net. That's the website for the film. And it started off on the evening of March 13th, 1997, thousands of Arizona residents witnessed a silent, mile-long, V-shaped formation of lights slowly gliding overhead. The unexplained sightings garnered headline news, catching the attention of USA Today, Extra, CNN, national morning TV shows, and even the evening news with Peter Jennings, Dan Rather, and Tom Brokaw. And Dr. Lynn has an amazing story that's connected with this event that talks about things that happened in her life before and after. So, Lynn, give us an idea of how this story started for you.
Actually, it's very ironic. I had no interest or knowledge in this topic at all before both my husband, who's also a physician, and I had a very close sighting to our home, just about 100 yards from our bedroom window. Actually, it was a little below us because we live high on a mountain in Paradise Valley in a private, gated, nestled in the mountains community. There is no way this could have been military. And what we saw were actually three amber orbs in a pyramid formation. One was on top and two were very closely aligned underneath, hovering about 75 feet above the private gated area. I immediately looked underneath to see if anybody was creating this, and it was pitch black. And coming from a video background, that's another ironic thing here. I've actually dedicated my life's work and passion to community education for over 30 years. I have produced video and workbook curriculums on the reality of vital health issues, such as AIDS and teen pregnancy and substance abuse prevention education, particularly for youth, from kindergarten through college, currently being distributed by Discovery Education. So when this happened, my first thought was grab the video camera, but it was downstairs. I didn't want to miss anything. And did you ever have a mental moment where you just took everything in? That moment is just so ingrained
where
in
your psyche. Where time seems to slow down.
Well, I tried to take in everything, the size, the shape, the color. They were about 3 to 6 feet each. They were three distinct objects. They were like an oval on its side, oval shaped. The color within each orb, and I call them an orb because the light did not extend outside the edge. It was self-contained, very mesmerizing, very soothing, and it didn't glare. Every other light out there I noticed immediately glared. And I thought, if I don't get a picture of this, nobody's going to believe it. And I go running to the closet to grab my 35 millimeter. My husband calls me back. He says, get over here quick. One of them is disappearing. And this is just so ingrained in my psyche. As we watched, and I really intently was watching every nuance of this, the top orb did not budge. It didn't waver, like you see with the cloaking devices in Star Trek. It didn't take off. It just, in place with the other two, started to dim very, very slowly. And it felt as if it was still there after it disappeared. I mean, the only thing I could relate is it went to another dimension. It was still there, but we didn't see it anymore. And I rushed out onto the balcony, shot a picture of the two bottom orbs, and noticed an eerie silence. It was quite bizarre. I mean, it was as if time had stopped. And also felt, as intently as I was looking at these two bottom orbs, that something was watching me. That's how it felt. And it was just totally extraordinary and going through my mind. And it took me a long time to share this with anyone, a couple years, you know, until the last sighting. Going through my mind was, who are you? What are you? Do you know that I'm here? I'd love to meet you. And as the bottom orb started to dissipate, I quickly shot a picture of that. That's all I remember from the entire experience. But what was amazing is that was the only picture that turned out at the time. But for me, it confirmed quite fully that something had happened. I caught a picture of it. I didn't even know who to show it to. Again, I had no interest or knowledge in this topic at all. In fact, I stayed away from it. I mean, I was so busy doing my community work and bringing up two young boys at the time. I just had no interest. I didn't know anyone to even show it to. But I did wonder for 2 years what this advanced technology, I didn't know we had this on Earth, was doing right outside of our window, even a little below us. And it wasn't until 2 years later that I noticed these amber orbs, but at a distance this time. And they were in a line formation, equidistant from each other. And I'm watching them from our bedroom window. One wall of our bedroom is a window, so we get to see whatever pops up out there if we're in the bedroom usually. And I'm thinking, well, they're amber, they're in a formation, they're hovering for minutes, strangely similar to the 95 sighting. Mm-hmm. And I watch each one as it seemed to implode from the outside inwards till it was a tiny dot, 1, 2, 3, from right to left.
So the light dimmed and became very small.
Well, it seemed like it was dimming down to a dot and then was gone,
right.
From right to left in succession. Well, you know, I thought, oh, geez, you know, again, this is a mystery. Until the next night, they popped up again. The same line formation of three now was far left. It was south instead of west from the night before. And I thought, oh, geez, I've got to get a camera. So I ran downstairs. I got my video camera. I get out outside, and I got about 18 seconds worth. And my battery went dead. Now, the battery was charged, so I don't know what that was about. But I ran in. I hooked it up again, and I ran out. They were gone. It's about 8 o'clock on January 22nd. 23rd, 1997. The first night was the 22nd. And I figured, oh, geez. And I waited until my husband came up the drive. He was on several state and medical boards, hospital boards at the time. And he was at a meeting. He came up about 8:30. And I walked outside. I said, remember I told you about the three orbs, amber orbs in a row last night? Well, about a half an hour ago, they were right in front of South Mountain. And I knew they were in front of South Mountain, by the way, because there's red blinking lights warning planes coming into the Sky Harbor International Airport. And it was behind, the lights were behind these orbs. And I said they were right in front of South Mountain. And as I'm pointing with my hand, they reappeared in the same spot.
Yeah, I remember that. Seeing that in the film, you described that, and in your book, you described
it. Yeah, it was unnerving.
Yeah.
I mean, here they are again in the same spot a half hour later. Well, I figured, oh, geez, I've got, you know, the video camera was being charged. I got to get a picture of this. As a scientist, I mean, I've always tried right along as a scientist to document as much as I can the hard evidence. And I ran upstairs, whatever it is. And I ran upstairs, and as I'm getting ready to shoot the three, suddenly six amber orbs in a massive span. I mean, it was more than a mile wide, you could tell by the landscape, popped up, totally equidistant from each other, above the three. I was shaking. It really was unnerving, because not having the 95 sighting explained to me, I thought, oh my goodness, is this a mothership or a fleet or something? It just was that extraordinary. And I started clicking away. What's really interesting, I got six pictures in a row of this thing head-on turning into a V-shape. So unnerving, didn't sleep well that night. The next morning, I called around, found air traffic controllers at Sky Harbor International Airport who saw the same thing. They were more excited than I was, that I had seen it too. They shared with me that it was in restricted airspace. They saw it at 8 o'clock as well. They saw the
right.
3
at 8 o'clock. Let me stop you there, because
sure,
that explains some things to people who are listening who are not familiar with the Phoenix metropolitan area. Surrounding the main part of Phoenix are South Mountain and a series of different very high peaks around the city, and all the city areas, the suburbia and downtown, are nestled in this little cove around, sort of in the center of all these mountains. So right in the middle of this area is the Phoenix Airport. And you see planes. I mean, I live right by South Mountain. I see planes flying by all the time, and you can tell they're planes. And I see military aircraft going by, and at night or in the daytime, you can tell that they're military aircraft. I mean, it's very obvious. So when you're looking out at the night sky and you see planes flying by and you realize what those are, it's very easy to pick out something that's unusual around here because all the lights are visible. They all glare, just like Dr. Lin said. And when something else appears, it stands out. If you see the Phoenix Lights video, the amazing thing is that these lights in a formation that stayed consistent was seen by air traffic controllers at Phoenix Airport. But the strange thing is that while they were looking at it, they look at their radar screen and they didn't see it on radar. So they would see something, and why don't we see it on radar? And that just tells you more about the mysteriousness of this phenomenon. So go ahead, Lynn. Continue.
Especially when it was in restricted airspace.
Right.
And they got alarmed, and they actually picked up their binoculars to look, and in their own words, which is very poignant because 2 months later, many people would say the same thing throughout the state of Arizona during the mass sighting, which we'll get to. But in their own words, they saw 6 points of light, totally equidistant from each other, that seemed to be attached to something, but they couldn't quite see what it was attached to, moving slowly in tandem, in synchrony, behind South Mountain. So I said, well, what was it? And there was silence. And then the fellow says, beats me. And I said, you're an air traffic controller. You're supposed to know what's in our airspace. If you don't know what they were, he said, no, now that you've called, I'm more curious than ever. I'll get back to you. In the meantime, I brought up my video camera, put it into the electric socket, and every night after that for the month of January, I saw these orbs showing up in different formations. By the way, the two mountain ranges behind Sky Harbor are South Mountain, and a little bit behind that is the Estrella Mountain Range, which in itself is interesting because it means star in Spanish. Where did it get its name? And I'll tell you about
the Indians.
The
Indians in this area. There's a lot of lore, spiritual lore, connected with these mountain ranges.
Absolutely. And actually, serendipitously, I've been invited to share my substance abuse prevention program at the Gila River Indian Reservation, right in the basin between South Mountain and the Estrella, 6 months prior to the mass sighting. And after the mass sighting, went back to these people because these pictures that I kept consistently taking were in the same location. It seemed to be in that mm-hmm. vicinity. And asked, you know, did they see them March 13th? And they started to giggle. And I said, is that funny? And they said, are you kidding? We've been looking at them for centuries. We're looking up at them for centuries. They're part of our culture.
Yeah,
South
Mountain itself, I've hiked up there, and there's rocks with petroglyphs with mm-hmm. what you would call star beings or light beings on the rock. I mean, these things have been seen in this area for thousands of years.
Exactly. And when they share that it's part of their culture, which is just so foreign, it's the first time I had heard that. I mean, I had no idea that there were indigenous peoples right here that believe that these orbs, that these energies are part of their ancestry, that their spirit world, and the like. At any rate, at that point, the month of February, there was nothing. But interestingly, after I started my intensive investigation, I found that on February 19th, 1997, there was a very similar mass sighting in St. Petersburg, Russia, and a couple of people actually got video that's identical to the pictures that I took on January 23rd.
Right, and also, I think back in the late 1970s, there was a whole massive sightings of this red V formation in the Hudson Valley in the New
mm-hmm.
York area, and which my father saw. He pulled off the road with about 60 other cars. He looked, he said, what is everybody? And they pointed up in the sky. He sees this big shape, just like what you saw at this V formation with the lights and everything, flying very slowly over. People were taking photographs of it with cameras. A couple of people had cameras there. So this is a phenomenon. It's not just seen in Phoenix. This is commonly seen in many places all over the planet, and it's been documented for many, many years.
See, I didn't know that yet.
I was
still looking in the sky for these strange
right.
lights. So starting on March the 1st, they started again. And I, as a scientist and you know, experiencer, 95 certainly, wanted to document them on film again. And I continuously ran out there and you know, ended up with an amazing collection of these formations. And by the way, the video doesn't do it justice, I have to say. On my website, if you get to the phoenixlights.net, I do have footage on the website, Fox and MSNBC reports, wonderful footage. But in the footage, they look white and they're smaller and they flicker, unlike the true unknowns, which are round like a ball. If you look through binoculars or telescope, it looks like a spinning ball of energy. And they don't flicker. They're a ball. The light is self-contained, and they're much bigger when they show right. up.
Well, in the Phoenix Lights video, there's some very good special effects that actually really kind of give you an idea of not only how clear this was to people, but actually how low it was.
Oh, yeah.
So let's talk about, March 13th of 1997.
Well, what happened actually is the week before I had called, you know, it was like enough. I mean, I was running, you know, I would be in the bedroom with my husband. I'd say, hold that thought, and I would run out, you know, to catch these pictures. It was getting a little ridiculous. So I figured, hey, there's got to be a logical explanation for this. And I started showing the footage to my friends, and I asked them, do they know anybody I can show this to? This is how close I was. A friend of a friend had a neighbor who had a friend who knew the past president of MUFON, Mutual UFO Network. So I gave him a call. I said, look, I have a picture, which was the only one that turned out at the time from 95. More would come out later. But that particular picture, I said, I have a picture that I know is authentic, but I'd like someone of credence to take a peek at it. And I'm seeing these orbs. Do you know anything about it? He had not. Interestingly, during the mass sighting, a number of people had seen these orbs detach from the main object, go into the environment, and redock with it. Is that what might have happened? Because in the pictures from 95, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but are the same formation of lights in the same location once again. But I didn't know that yet. At any rate, I make an appointment for the field investigator from MUFON for the following week on a Wednesday. He calls to cancel because the then state director of MUFON's mom had passed on. And the only window of opportunity I had was that Friday morning at 10 o'clock for like 2-3 weeks. I said, please, I want to find out what this is already. Can we meet then? Sure. Well, I, you know, for Thursday night for me was a regular night, like any other night. And I see one lone light far south about 8:20, which computes because, far north, I'm sorry, that's when the first call came in at 8:20 from a police officer in Paulden, Arizona, which is northwest.
And now we're
Arizona.
Talking about March 13th, 1997.
March 13th, 1997.
10 years ago, right.
He was the first to call in to report this strange array of lights, massive array, mile to 2 miles wide, array of lights, and it traversed down the central corridor. Now, remember, thousands of people are outside on that particular night, by the way, looking up at the sky purposely to catch a glimpse of the Hale-Bopp Comet. When this mile to 2 mile wide array of V-shape or boomerang-shaped lights, and some people did see a craft. Some people reported seeing a craft, even windows on the craft, glided right over their heads, very low altitude.
Very slowly. So it's
very
not,
slow,
it's not
30 miles
by,
an hour.
It's just like crawling almost.
Right,
and you show how that looks in the film, how slowly it moved and how low it was.
Very non-threatening, just gliding right over their heads. Some people said they could have thrown a rock at it. They felt
well,
it, was
it started
so
up, started up in the northwest corner of the state, and it came kind of down diagonally and directly over the entire Phoenix metropolitan area, right through the corridor, through downtown, passed by, it was real close to the airport.
And yeah, we have reports.
And there, it flew really low over people's houses, and some of people that we both know are friends of ours. They looked up, and like you said, it was so low they could almost, if they had a good pitching arm, they could throw up a rock and hit it. That's how low it was.
And then it traversed down to Tucson. Now, about 9:20, I was seeing one lone light far south. Now, to me, that was unusual because usually when I would see these lights, they would show up in a series of three, about 5 to 10 minutes apart. Now it was in a totally different area of the sky, an hour apart, and I just noted the time. I didn't rush out to take a picture because I had so much in the can anyway for the guy the next morning. But about 10 o'clock, the news is just starting, and both my husband and I simultaneously see the same formation as 2 months prior in the same location, which, by the way, at the time, I was told the pictures were blank. Okay, so I was excited to get out there and get some video of it. Run outside. By the time I get out there, three had disappeared, and I caught the three lights like the ends of a giant triangle above the city. I was thrilled I had caught something of this same similar formation from two months before. I walk in the next morning to the field investigator from MUFON, Mutual UFO Network. I had no idea anything unusual had happened. He is like crazed. Did you see what happened last night, the mass sighting last night? And I said, well, I saw something similar that I told you I had seen 2 months ago. He said, no, 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 you don't understand. Hundreds, if not thousands, of people were outside looking up purposely at the Hale-Bopp Comet and outside on a beautiful night and saw this massive mile to 2 mile wide phenomena pass right over their heads. Some people did see it take off at a tremendous speed, by the way. Incredible technology, to be sure. And he said NBC would be there in a half an hour to interview him. I said, whoa, I had done health reporting, not only in Philadelphia in 76 with Jessica Savage for NBC, but in the early 80s for NBC here, Channel 12, Health Team. I started Health Team 12.
Right. And at first, and you wanted to remain anonymous.
Oh, yeah, well, I thought, you know, hey, right. They might know me, and I didn't know what we were dealing with.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know if it was a hoax or if it was military or whatever. But that's not the point. It's not about me. It was about the data from get-go. And I said to the fella, you know what? You know, I'd love to share what we saw with other people if they'd like to see it. Take a copy of the footage and share it with the news media. And I got out of there real fast. and of all things, by 4:30 that afternoon when the news programs began, it was plastered, my footage was plastered over every news station. By 9 o'clock, there were a couple of other videos that came forward that were spectacular, better than mine. I mean, you look at Tom King's video, and anybody that can get on the website, thephoenixlights.net, it's in a Fox report there. His arrowhead looking light formation is attached to something. Those lights are attached to something. And the Christens was amazing, too. Well, now thousands of people had seen what I had seen. I mean, obviously, whoever did this wanted to be seen. But now, for me, it was very confirmatory that now thousands had seen what I had been seeing. But I didn't know what to do with what I had. And here I'm just sitting back watching the story unfold. And about a week later, I see my footage on the news, and they're interviewing a fella who just happened to be a couple blocks from ASU, Jim Dellatoso, who supposedly was this not only a computer specialist, but he was also a world-renowned UFO investigator who had a database of hundreds of pictures and footage from around the world, and he was showing these amber orbs in triangle formations from around the world. That was the first I had heard of it.
Right, and Jim actually was involved doing photo analysis, both of photographs and videotape.
Absolutely. So I thought, oh my goodness, he's the one. First of all, I was blown away that this was happening worldwide. I had no idea. And now I had pictures. Actually, that night I was tossing and turning with the pressing thought, because those pictures did not turn out supposedly from 2 months before. But here I'm, you know, awake and throughout the night, take the negatives back. There's
and
something.
It's sort of like a telepathic message that was happening.
I don't
it
know.
Felt wherever
I don't know,
it came
Randall,
from, or just
but
a thought
I would have
from
never
your
even,
subconscious.
Yeah, I would have never thought to do that. I just wouldn't have. I was tall. I wasn't a photographer. I never thought to do that. And yet, I was so driven in the morning to grab those blank strips, as well as some from 95, which I had thrown out some, which who knows what was in them. But I took them to the photographer, developer, and I said, hey, I know they look blank. It's just lights. You know, maybe you can darken it, lighten it, whatever, and see if there's something there. Well, lo and behold, she comes handing me four unbelievable pictures that, again, I mean, I was just blown away. I had actually caught this formation 2 months before the mass sighting, head on, turning into a V-shape, six pictures in a row. And you can see particularly the first picture. I have the first picture and the last picture on the website. You can see in the first picture, I was shaking. It was really unnerving. The last picture is interesting because if you really take a look at it, you can see that there's every other orb is bigger than the one in between. So if you look at the case where this thing we're looking at its side view, then the closer arm are the bigger orbs and the smaller arm are the further away orbs, meaning that there was a field in between. There was a lot going on March 13th throughout the state, okay, from about 5 p.m., I have reports, till about 2 p.m., 2 a.m. Now, of course, the bulk was between, you know, the 7 to 10 area, 10:30 area, but certainly it seemed that there was a parade going on, whether this phenomena could morph into different things, because we have a report. We have a report about 8 o'clock from that was called in the next morning by an alleged crewman from Luke Air Force Base to the UFO Reporting Center, Peter Davenport, recorded serial numbers, names, et cetera, that Air Force jets were sent out to intercept this thing or take gun camera film up, and we have witnesses that saw them as well. And as they got closer, and this was traveling, this was traversing right over 7th Avenue and Indian School, the center of Phoenix.
Right.
As they got closer, it blinked out. And so freaked out the pilot that this crewman said he was one of the people to help that this pilot out of his aircraft.
So people actually saw the jets going toward the light.
Yes, we have a number of people who confirmed that they actually saw Air Force jets with their bat burners, you know, glaring, and they were after this thing. So, you know, it just confirms that something really, really unusual was happening here. And then about 10 o'clock, and we're talking about a half-hour span from about 20 of 10 to about 20 after 10, myself included and the other videographers, and there's only a handful of people that actually got video that night. There is an earlier video from the 8 o'clock hour, which has mysteriously gone away. But be that as it may, about 10 o'clock, and we do have witnesses as well, that we're seeing these things around the 10, 11 o'clock area in the Scottsdale Cave Creek area. And to this day, I'm still getting calls for, and emails from people that saw this thing for many, many hours, or these phenomena traverse the state. So there was really a parade throughout the state. Whoever did this wanted to be seen. What was curious to me is that if it was military, and, you know, let's be clear. I mean, again, thousands of people were purposely outside looking up. Why would they do this and then deny it? Because there was no explanation, no investigation for months until a USA Today article came out June 18th, which opened this up to international scrutiny. And we were deluged by media from all over the world. And I have to say, once I learned that this was happening worldwide, I started to keep an intricate journal. And this was back a week after the mass sighting. And I had interviewed many witnesses. And like the media, the detail and the heartfelt reports from the media really took them aback, and they said, well, you know, something really unbelievable happened here. Why isn't there an investigation? Why isn't there an explanation? And one lone councilwoman, she was the only person in the government, because hundreds, over 1,000 of her constituents called her to say that they had seen this amazing happening. Why isn't there an investigation? Frances Emma Barwood, innocently, because she hadn't seen it. She just did it because she was doing her job at a council meeting and voicing her constituents' concerns, said, you know, maybe we should look into this. Well, she was plastered. I mean, I have to tell you, I was so happy that I had kept anonymous, because when I saw what was happening to people who did come forward and talk about it, it wasn't a pretty picture. And at that point, I figured, you know what, I'm just going to do my own homework. Certainly as an educator, before I can educate other people, I've got to educate myself. So I pushed my entire professional life for 4 years to find a logical source and meaning for what I witnessed and photographed. I have yet to find it.
Wow. Well, we'll be right back with more of Dr. Lynn Kitai's story about the Phoenix Lights right after this break.
Awakened Media for a transforming world. Seventh Wave Network.
Even the most cynical has to admit that the Earth is filled with unexplained mysteries, from matters of science and technology to UFO sightings, crop circles, hauntings, and Bigfoot. Some phenomena have yet to offer satisfactory explanations. On Mystery Tour, Investigating the Unknown with Kim Guarnaccia and Tim Swartz, fully explore the fascinating topics of the supernatural, unexplained phenomena, and ancient mysteries in a supportive atmosphere of learning and mutual respect. Kim and Tim interview noted authors, historians, psychics, experts, and scientists who reveal their latest findings on various topics of the unexplained, including cryptozoology, hauntings, possessions, and exorcisms, world religions, psychic predictions, conspiracies, unexplained phenomena, UFOs, and aliens, archaeological anomalies, scientific mysteries, and sacred sites. Mystery Tour, Investigating the Unknown, broadcast each Thursday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on the 7th Wave Network. Mystery Tour, Investigating the Unknown, challenge your beliefs. improve your spiritual well-being, and experience a new way of looking at spirituality and wellness. Tune into Spiritual Evolution with spiritual counselor, healer, and animal communicator, Kelly Marie. Each week, Kelly and her guests explore spiritual problem solving and connecting balance between the body and spirit. Spiritual Evolution with Kelly Marie, broadcast every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on the Seventh Wave Network, your online community for positive change. Spiritual Evolution, expanding the boundaries and broadening the vision of spirituality through inspiration and education.
As above, so below. As within, so without. Connect to a life recognizing and celebrating the union between soul and spirit, between land and sky, between feminine and masculine, between body and mind, and between shadow and light. On Shamanic Astrology with host Daniel Giammario, Daniel explores the astrological paradigm that values every possible place on the wheel of life, without judgment and supporting compassion, especially compassion for ourselves. Daniel is the creator of the Shamanic Astrology Paradigm and founder and director of the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School. The program is a blend of astrology, archetypal mythology, and shamanic practices of consciously engaging with the natural rhythms and cycles of land and sky. Shamanic Astrology with Daniel Giammario broadcasts each Friday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on the Seventh Wave Network. Shamanic Astrology. Navigate the powerful initiatory processes transforming global humanity now.
Awakened Media for a transforming world. Seventh Wave Network.
Hi, everyone. Well, we're back on Spirit of Film Conversations. I'm your host, Randall Libero, and we're talking today with Dr. Lynn Kitai about the Phoenix Lights. You can go to thephoenixlights.net and take a look at everything all about this movie. It's an amazing documentary about a true life, widely witnessed UFO event that centers around a date in 10 years ago in 1997 in March when some sort of a craft or some whatever it was, a series of lights, traveled from the northwestern corner of the state of Arizona all the way across the main metropolitan area of downtown Phoenix very slowly and was witnessed by thousands of people. So we're picking up the story now about what happened after this event a few months later when the news media started to pick it up. And Lynn, just take the story from there.
Actually, it was throughout the entire state, when you really look at the whole picture. And I have reports from New Mexico as well as Nevada later that night. New Mexico earlier that night, Nevada. So, I mean, it was just spectacular. And here there was no investigation or explanation. And the USA Today article came out June 18th, opening up to international scrutiny. And I have to say the media, once they did talk to the witnesses, were so impressed by the detail and the heartfelt reports that they, too, were clamoring, why isn't there an investigation? Why isn't there an explanation? And lo and behold, about a month later, and I had done my homework there, too. I had called every military base, by the way, asking if they had any idea what this was. And they were more interested in seeing my photographic documentation and giving an explanation for it. And some of them even made jokes. I mean, they really didn't know. They were just as curious. But anyway, I get a call from the head of PR at the Air National Guard, and this is a month later, July 24th, and she says, Dr. Lynn, you know, we just realized that no one ever looked at the log for visiting Air National Guard snowbird units, and the Air National Guard, Maryland Air National Guard, was in town sending off flares, so that must be what some people saw. That was her exact words, and I said, well, wait a minute, because I hadn't told them what I had in my possession, just that I had shot some things. I said, well, wait a minute, when were they in town? She said, well, March 1st to the 15th. I said, so they weren't here in January? She said, no. I said, well, I have pictures that confirm that whoever did this did the same thing in the same location 2 months before the mass sighting. She said, well, you never told me that. Uh-oh. And then I said, well, besides that, I educated myself on flares anyway, because that was, you know, I was just curious about anything that it could be, logically. And, you know, flares drift, they drop, they're white with multicolor sparks. They, right.
And
they
in the movie, there's a great sequence where they basically disprove this entire idea that these sightings could have been anything related or look like flares.
Well, they don't have the characteristics of flares. Flares
right.
cannot keep a formation. It's impossible. They have not only parachutes and they drift with the wind, but they have giant smoke trails as well. But at any rate, I said, and you're telling me that a formation, a rock-solid formation of flares in a V-shaped formation traversed the entire state over many hours? She said, oh, I have a call coming in. I'll get back to you while I'm still waiting. Anyway, that being said, many of us, even after the announcement, said, fine. You know, I was in, you know, if it's military, do it again. Well, I have to say, and I'll make this really brief, it wasn't until 3 years later, right before the third anniversary, that they announced 3 Air National Guards were coming in town, sending off flares, showing everybody the Phoenix lights. They were supposed to do a 2-week run, and everybody was out with their picture, with their cameras and media and witnesses alike. It was a dismal disappointment. I have to tell you, they tried to make a triangle, was upside down, it fell apart right away. You could see the smoke trails. I mean, it was a joke, and confirmed for me personally, because by then I had pushed my entire professional life aside trying to find a logical explanation and was open. If they could reenact it, fine. Well, I have pictures that show the same phenomena in the same location 3 times, 2 times prior, 2 years and 2 months prior to the mass sighting. It has yet to be reenacted 10 years later. That being said, there were also witnesses, okay, that I found very curious. We want to get into this, that I found were sharing that they had near-death experiences as children that were reawakened by the mass sighting. And I thought, geez, you know, not only is that curious in and of itself, but I, too, when I go into that in the book, had a near-death experience as a child that was reawakened. The memory of it was so long buried, but like a cathartic moment was reawakened right before the lights reappeared. In January of 97, and I thought, geez, could there possibly be a connection between all unexplained phenomena, be they near-death experience, out-of-body, unexplained aerial phenomena that have a mystical light associated with the experience? And lo and behold, again, I knew nothing about this or that there were even studies being done at university level. The Omega Project of the University of Connecticut, Dr. Kenneth Ring and Dr. Stuart Twemlow in Kansas. And,
right, and if you've read UFO literature, this goes back many years. 20 years ago, I was reading books by Dr. Jacques Vallée, who, if you remember the movie Close Encounters, the French astrophysicist that's portrayed by François Truffaut is based on Dr. Vallée. And Dr. Jacques Vallée wrote about how ancient lore of sightings about strange beings and strange phenomenon not only goes back thousands of years, but it's interwoven into the mythologies of many, many countries and many cultures all over the planet. And there's a lot of correlation between spiritual experiences and whatever this UFO phenomenon, or in the book you mention it as use the abbreviation of UP, just unexplained phenomena.
Exactly, because what I found so striking is not only was the experience very similar, and I break that down in the book to be easily understood by the reader, but also what really impacted my perspective was that the after effect, the positive awakening, the enlightenment, the waking up of that individual to realize that we are so much more connected to the universe, to the earth, to each other, so much more intimately than we could have ever imagined. And I started calling them all unexplained phenomena ups and up, because they are an up, because they really do transform your life for the better. Those that either experience it, truly experience it, whether it's a near-death experience, out-of-body, or unexplained aerial phenomena, but also those who learn about it. You don't have to have the experience to have this positive transformation. If you read about it, if you learn about it, it soon becomes quite evident, as it did with me personally, that this goes back, as you mentioned, many, 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 many centuries. I mean, to when human documentation started, there is so much evidence, there is so much data that confirms.
And I want to read actually a passage from your book on page 143. It begins with, David Jacobs, PhD, UFO researcher and history professor at my alma mater, Temple University, told me in a telephone conversation in 1999
that in polls at the time, 1 in 50 Americans exhibit at least 4 out of 5 common symptoms of UFO contacts. In other words, as many as 2% of our adult population might be experiencing something otherworldly. Dr. Jacobs pointed out that after examining the situation for the past 20 years, he believes that over 8 million people have been contacted by UFO intelligences, many without their cognitive knowledge. So that just goes to show you how widespread all over the world this experience of seeing what you call UP
enough
is extremely common with people.
Oh, yes. Well, there's, you know, at least 3 million. I mean, this was years ago. They estimated 3 million people have had near-death experiences. And what's significant, if you look at the data, even just of near-death experiencers, they come back transformed, not only knowing that love and knowledge are the only things you take with you, they don't fear death anymore. And they also know that there is so much more of a reality out there than not only are we being told, but that we have yet realize that it's in our consciousness. But I think that these visitations by whoever they are, and I've never said what they are. I only said that they are. I don't know what they are. I don't know if they're interstellar beings or interdimensional intelligences or spirit world or time travelers, whatever. It's mysterious. It's anomalous. Something is happening to wake us up, not only to their presence worldwide, but also to the positive potential we have, that we are spiritual beings. And when you hear this over and over again from people who are experiencers or witnesses worldwide, it starts to sink in that we have so much more positive potential than what we're doing to ourselves and to the earth right now. And whoever is doing this is trying to wake us up in a gentle way, slowly gliding over our major cities and waking people up one person at a time. And that's what I hope the book and the DVD, the documentary, help doing. Because I have to tell you, before I did the documentary, I did go back to work. I was chief clinical consultant at the Arizona Heart Institute. One is an imaging center, vital imaging. And the book came out March of 2004, and I was really scared. I stayed anonymous for 7 years. I did not want to come forward with this. There is just so much controversy, so much ridicule and ostracizing and criticism surrounding this topic. Why would I do that? I was very content working in the health profession, medical profession, and doing my work for the community that way. But nonetheless, after coming up with a 750-page journal of incredible information and quotes from pilots and presidents and military confirming the reality of this situation, it became quite clear. In good conscience, I couldn't stick it in a drawer, and decided that, hey, you know, there definitely is a chunk of history missing from our history books, and I hope with the documentary and with the book, I can start to fill that gap a bit. And what really alerted me, I have to share, is after the book came out, and again, I was taking such a risk. I still am. I'm taking a risk to both my professional and personal life. It has been so fulfilling. So many people really appreciate the work that's gone into this. I squeezed down that 750 pages of the best that I had found and discovered to 220 pages. And I have to say, after it came out, I was overwhelmed. I was overwhelmed by not only the kindness that people had, but also the appreciation that they had for someone of credence coming forward to say it's okay to talk about this. Most things can be explained. Most things can be explained. But there are a small percentage of things that cannot. And just because we might not have the technology yet to definitively define what these things are, it doesn't mean they're not real. You know, it took human beings 17 centuries. That's a long, long time to realize it. With the advent of the microscope, that there are zillions of tiny microorganisms, living entities all around us, even in our bodies. And we just discovered recently that every living cell has electromagnetic energy around it, which helped us develop the MRI, the magnetic resonance imaging machine that detects disease non-invasively. Well, just because we can't see these tiny living organisms or electromagnetic energies or radio waves or gamma rays, it doesn't mean they're not real.
And a lot of UP phenomenon or UFOs are captured on night vision or
infrared film. As a matter of fact, I was watching videos last night, and you probably just look up best UFO video on the internet, and there's lots of videos, let me tell you. Someone had positioned a camera. One was photographing real-time daylight video, and one was photographing a UFO craft or whatever it was with another camera that had an infrared filter on it, and at the same time, and it didn't show up on the normal camera, but it did show up on the infrared camera. So you can see whatever the UP is, it's moving from one spectrum of reality to another, one dimension, it's just not always visible to our eyes. So if you can take that into account, imagine that this phenomenon is around us all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I call them an up.
Okay.
Okay. It's UP, but it's an up.
I'm getting it.
It is an up. It is. It's a positive thing here. But besides that, yes, in the Mexico Air Force, actually, with their infrared film, captured quite recently these orbs in the same formations. I mean, they've been analyzed, and they're very similar to what I've captured on film and video.
There's a lot of Mexico footage.
Yes, yes.
I mean, there's just tons of it. And Jaime Maussan is down there. We're talking about him last week.
And interestingly, too, their first big flap of these UFO sightings was in 91 when thousands of people were looking up at the sky at an eclipse. And they also caught these UFOs, these unexplained aerial phenomena in their sight, and they photographed them and really sent them. They're a little earlier than us, so they're a little more progressed than we are in seeing these things. They're seeing them every day. They're all over the country, and people are open to them. People get excited when they see them. And that's another thing I should mention. When this formation of lights attached that seemed to be attached to something, or this craft traversed the state of Arizona. About 6 months before the movie Independence Day had come out, and it's interesting that children were most times the first ones to see this formation coming towards them, and they got scared. They were fearful, shouting, Independence Day, Independence Day, because we're so ingrained with the thoughts of threat and harm. But as the formation, as the phenomena came close, not only children, but adults as well, felt a calmness come over them, felt a connection to this phenomena, and an excitement, an awe, and even a joy at feeling fortunate to have experienced this. I still get emails to today that express that. And when the phenomena passed by, the same children that were first fearful, because it's so ingrained in our psyche to be so, wanted to run after the phenomena or get in the car. Come on, let's get in the car and chase after it. That's an interesting little sideline to this. But it just shows that whoever's doing this is doing it in a gentle way just to wake us up to their presence. And certainly the message as well, and that was another important reason why I came forward, not only to let people know that, yes, most things can be explained, but if they experience something that's real to them, it's important to share. It's very healing to share. But also that these things are happening worldwide at a faster pace. Something is happening, and the message that most people are getting that listen, okay, that really experience these phenomena is wake up to what you're doing to the earth and to each other before it's too late.
Yeah, many of the experiences that people report on who have close encounters is there's a sort of euphoria that's associated with coming in close contact with UPs. And I mean, the experience that people describe is very similar to what would be labeled a spiritual experience. Matter of fact, this goes back, and it's seen all over the planet. If you remember the Fatima sightings in mm-hmm. was it Portugal or Spain, mm-hmm. back in the early 1900s, this was witnessed. The lights came very close to the ground, and they were seen by hundreds and hundreds of people that were gathered, and they all had. I mean, it's a very famous encounter. You can look it up. It's Fatima, Fatima.
We actually address it in the documentary
as well. Right, and that's you talk about that in your film. And I want to get back to the film a little bit. Now, you're also doing some lectures, and the film is, there's a screening that's happening on the anniversary or close to the anniversary next month. So talk a little bit about that for people who are in Phoenix and listening to the show.
Actually, with the 10th anniversary coming up, it's 10 years, and it's still unexplained. It cannot be explained or denied. And I certainly took extreme lengths to find a logical explanation. I went down to the University of Arizona Optical Science Department, Consciousness Study Department, Arizona State University, Geology, Mathematics, Anthropology, Astronomy Departments, as well as Brooks Institute of Photography, and also acclaimed UFO investigator, Navy optical physicist, Dr. Bruce McAbee, to have someone explain to me what I had in my possession. And to this day, nobody can. Again, we don't have the technology yet to definitively define what these things are, but we can show what they're not. And it just rules out everything that we know as being a natural phenomena or something that we can explain. So at this point, it was really important that when I came out with the book, I was approached by a filmmaker, and certainly producing video and workbook curriculums, wanted to get something out there visually for people. And the thing that really was a sign for me, I was invited after doing a Barnes & Noble presentation to a middle school here with over 200 middle school students. At the end of the day, the last period of the day, teachers and parents who were there were astounded that you could hear a pin drop. You could hear a pin drop. They thirst for this knowledge. And I realized that there really is a chunk of history missing from our history books. And I felt obliged to fulfill that. Also, with the 10th anniversary coming up, now that we do have the documentary, and we're so proud. I mean, it's unheard of. I mean, we have won over a dozen international film festival awards. It has been embraced by the film community and the mainstream community, which is so important to me personally because I'm in the mainstream. And I was a healthy skeptic when all this began, and I just felt it was too important not to share. So what we're doing for the 10th anniversary, and anyone that can get on the website, thephoenixlights.net, on the awards events page is a whole list, which is so thrilling, and I'm so honored that now the educational community is also opening up to this. Not only do we have presentations for the Glendale Libraries this Saturday, the 3rd of March at 2 o'clock at the Glendale City Council Chambers, not only am I presenting my data, and people can decide for themselves. I call it coincidence or communication. I leave it to the audience to decide what would they do with this information if it happened to them. But we also are having a witness forum for the first time. We're having a witness forum where witnesses can share, if they choose, their stories. There are many stories of the big city, not just mine. This is a team effort here. I am so blessed that people have been thankful that someone of credence came forward to say it's okay. It's okay to talk about this without the criticism and the ridicule. We also have screenings. As you said, the Peoria Film Festival invited us to screen our play as the last film of the festival, and they're actually honoring us with an award for film contribution, which is wonderful. Next weekend, March 10th, we have another presentation. I'm presenting Q&A and so forth at the Mustang Library. Barnes & Noble is sponsoring that one, and Poison Pen bookstores, and that's at 7 o'clock at the Mustang Library, 90th Street and Via Linda. And on Sunday, we have our big screenings at the Harkins Movie Theater. They have been extremely, wonderfully supportive of our work, and we'll have three screenings at 1, 4, and 7 on Sunday, March the 11th, celebrating the 10th anniversary, and then I have two other presentations at Paradise Valley Community College on March the 28th at 7 o'clock, and at ASU, Arizona State University, on April the 11th at 4:30, I believe. Also, Arizona State University, on March the 8th, is opening up an exhibit a wonderful exhibit featuring the Phoenix Lights and other incredible photographs and footage of these phenomena at the Anthropology Museum. So now that the educational community is starting to open up to this, I'm so thrilled because it does lend credence to the whole scenario and celebrates how much work that's gone into this and the work that's the evidence speaks for itself. The data speaks for itself.
And I want to come back to that for just a minute. They have come back after recently, and they've now edited that footage into the end of your movie.
Actually, after the mass sighting, I've been told too by experts that no one ever, I mean, what do you do with this? No one ever has photographed both 35 millimeter and footage of the same global phenomena prior to, during, and after an historic mass sighting. And I continue to photograph these phenomena. In fact, the picture that's on the cover of our documentary, I'd love somebody to tell me what it is. Those are three objects that I actually captured 1 month after 9/11, and there's a story behind every one of these sightings, which I share in my presentation, and also the one picture, which has never been divulged, that prompted me to come forward after 7 years of anonymity. So I hope people join us.
Okay, well, this has been quite an hour. Of course, if you want to find out more about the Phoenix Lights documentary film, you can go to www.thephoenixlights.net. And find out more, and everything's right on that website. And if you're going to be in town next month in March, please be sure to stop by one of the Phoenix Lights events. I'm sure you'll be pleasantly not only surprised but enchanted. Well, Dr. Lynn, thanks so much for being with us today. I really appreciate you stopping by on Spirit of Film.
And we appreciate just getting the information out there. It's so important that people become aware, that we raise awareness to this incredible, incredible sighting here and also to the global phenomena that's happening worldwide. Thank you.
All right. Well, that's a wrap for our show for this week. Join us again next week as we showcase the very best in movie entertainment that inspires us towards positive change and honors the belief that simple choices can change the world. I'd like to thank our engineers, Reuben Colomb and Ryan Treasure, who helped put the show together, and especially to Tom Kirsch and the rest of the Catfish Groove Farm Band for our theme music. You can hear more of their really cool tunes at catfishgroovefarm.com. And of course, please tell your friends about where to find our program right here on SeventhWaveNetwork.com. And remember, you are the writer, producer, director, and star of your own movie that's called Your Life. So make it a blockbuster, and it'll be a classic. Until next time, I'm Randall Abaro for Spirit of Film Conversations. We'll see you next week.